Now this is pod racing.
I'm sorry, it's so good.
Perfect. Cut it, print it.
That's all we need for the podcast today. There we go. Thomas reliving our Phantom Menace days. Anyways, and in fact, Thomas actually prepping so hard for today's show that he got a new plant.
New plant.
And what did you name your plant?
New plant named Blade in the house, and it's very exciting. Everyone should be extremely excited. That's the news.
I'm so hype, I can barely speak.
Some house plants are always trying to ice skate uphill.
So we're going to start the office pool, the office death pool right now. How long do you think Thomas is going to keep this particular plant alive? Wow. If you recall, he has killed at least one of his previous plants pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And we're sure this plant's not going to attack you like the other flora of Australia.
Well, those are feral. Like this one supposedly is domesticated, so maybe it'll be okay.
He thinks until he wakes up at night and the plant has his t-shirt bunched up in his fist going, I rule now. Well, welcome back to Community Rewatching 101. I'm Justin. With me is Heather, a.k.a. Stick.
Yeah.
Tomoville. I'll give you partial points for that one.
Yeah, and I don't deserve any points. I'm sorry.
But I'll aid. I think Al gets the name reward today. There's this
he always gets the name reward. That's not fair, Justin.
It's easy to work Al into
automatically.
It is, so it's even less fair.
Don't hate the player, hate the game.
You guys came up with a game. You've been doing it for so many shows now, having to come up with the most interesting username for our recording software suite. So, yeah, we're here to talk about Community Season 3, Episode 15, Vampire Mythology something. I don't know. It's Origins of Vampire Mythology, Tortured Title of Vampire Mythology, something like that. And we're going to be, we're going to talk about a particular 90s movie that some credit with the beginning of the modern superhero genre, a.k.a. Batman Forever. Yep, that's it. That's the movie. Val Kilmer. Talk about a Batman nobody ever talks about. I think that Val Kilmer kisses his lucky stars that George Clooney came around 2 years later and made an even worse Batman. He's like, hey, I'm not in the bad one anymore. I'm pretty good. Got like that. So, no, we're going to be talking about Blade. Let's talk about Blade for a minute, for a hot minute. Do you guys like Blade? Are you there with Troy and Abed as they're like, yeah, dude, let's watch Blade.
Yeah, I would 100%, if someone asked me right now if I want to watch Blade, I'd be like, yes, please.
It's been so long since I've seen it.
It has for me as well, but it's because So it's been like 10 years, but I used to watch it a lot because it was one of my ex-husband's favorite movies of all time. So I've seen it a lot.
Thomas, are you being very quiet because you've never seen it and you don't want us to call you out on it?
In the spirit of this episode where they sit down to watch Blade and they don't get through all of it because they keep getting interrupted, I've watched the first 20 minutes or so of Blade and in the last couple of days, and I just didn't have the time to get through more, but the first 20 minutes was rocking. It seems cool.
It was the club scene, right? Like that's hype.
Yeah,
you got a taste. It's a good taste.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a wonderfully dark 90s movie. And Al, you've seen it, of course, right?
Oh my, I'm completely pro Blade. I own the trilogy and the TV show starring Sticky Fingers.
I did not know. I didn't remember the TV show.
Yeah, it ran for about 10 episodes. And they released it on DVD, and you're darn right I own it.
It's so aggravating in this episode when somebody asks, like, why can he walk about in the day? He's a vampire. No, dude, he's half vampire. And they never corrected him. I'm like, Abed, dude.
He's also not a kickboxing vampire. I'm sorry, he isn't.
And I was like, where's the kickboxing coming from?
It's a great phrase.
Does he kick at some point? He must kick.
I mean, he kicks.
But that's not kickboxing.
No. It's like just part of another martial art.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Wesley Snipes, he really rocked it. Not too many people talk about Blade these days. I know there was a remake. Maybe there is a remake in the works, but I don't think it needs to be remade. It was such a good trilogy of films. I even like the third one. You have Ryan Reynolds talking it up. I mean, not the best movie, but it was not horrible. It's no Spider-Man 3 by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, not many movies are.
Yeah.
My recollection of the third one is that he stays in character the entire time in the Blade movies, like when he's off camera and everything. And he would come out of his trailer, film his scenes, and go back into his trailer. He talked to nobody. Wesley Snipes was apparently not happy during that movie, which is why he's barely in it.
Aw.
Uh-huh.
And yes, there is a reboot with Moonlight Guy, Mahershala Ali. I'm probably mispronouncing it.
Yeah, okay. They seem to be struggling to make that, though. I think it's changed director like 3 times.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that was right at the prime of his 90s action movie career. He had some really good, you know, Demolition Man, one of my all-time favorite 90s sci-fi action movies.
Passenger 57?
Yeah, Passenger
Always 57. Bet on Black.
Future Sport, the movie I've only seen, but it was there. Dean Cain starred in Future Sport.
Oh, goody.
Wesley Snipes, for some reason. Not even, it was like direct to video. It was good times. But that was the same year he did Blade, and Blade just like shot him to the top of everybody's cool charts. It had all the 90s cool, you know, had black leather, katanas, bullets. I mean, surprisingly dark, like, you know, R-rated superhero stuff, which they didn't really do in the 90s for the most part. If you had a superhero movie, it was a lot of hard plastic shells and PG or maybe PG-13 stuff, but not R. Blade really kind of pioneered a little bit of stuff and then brought us into the 2000s with X-Men and Spider-Man, and people are like, whoa, superhero movies are cool, we need more of these. And Marvel woke up and said, what? Okay, sure. Let's do a million of them every year until you're sick of them. And we're like, oh, crap. But there was a few years there where it was good stuff. All right, well, let's talk about this episode. And Thomas has our summary to on-ramp us into our discussion.
All right, this is Origins of Vampire Mythology, written by Dan Harmon and directed by Steven Tsuchida. In this episode, the carnival is coming to Greendale. And along with it, Blade. No, not the fantastic kickboxing or not kickboxing vampire movie. Britta's ex-boyfriend. The one she has an insatiable urge to see again. And who, consequently, Jeff is extremely jealous of. Britta stays over with Annie so that she can be prevented from contacting him. And it becomes clear that Britta is attracted to terrible men. And when Troy fakes a nice message, Britta is no longer interested in the old flame. Together with Abed, and the Dean, who's there on a half-hearted attempt to get Troy to join Vice Dean Laybourne's air conditioning repair school, they all watch Blade, the fantastic kickboxing vampire movie, not Britta's ex-boyfriend, who Jeff and Shirley find at the carnival to see what makes him so irresistible. Turns out it's his inability to feel shame due to brain damage. Oh, and Pierce and Chang experience every single stage of a whirlwind bromance. and I think that's it. Flawless.
10 out of 10.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't know why this popped in my head. I'm just going to say it because I don't want to forget it. That carnival set is the most adorable little set that I think they've ever created for that show. It's obviously not that big, but it's cute. It's adorable. It's, they got a lot of use out of it with all the extras and everything. I would go to that carnival.
They built that inside the cafeteria, apparently. Which,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's what it says online, which I would not have guessed at all. I thought they sold it well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they keep the shots pretty tight, so I guess I could see them just make like a very small area of the set look like a carnival and just don't move the camera too much.
And just fill it with tons and tons of people as usual.
Have it take place at night, you know. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, clever. Yeah, they did good. It's so nice to see Troy and Abed back being, you know, best childhood chums doing patty cake at the beginning of the episode. That was that's good for my heart. And in fact, somebody actually just tweeted the other day a picture that we totally missed, a little detail. Two episodes back, when Britta and Subway were talking in the library, and there's a shot when Britta is talking through the books, through the shelves of books at Subway, and one of the shelves of books, the label is Civil War. Uh-oh. And that apparently was a little bit of a foreshadowing for the next episode. I thought that was kind of clever. I never noticed that before. Has nothing to do with this episode, but I just wanted to share it. So, yeah. I think this episode kind of does start on a bit of a weird, not great, not natural footing. I think everyone piles on Britta really awkwardly. And I was wondering if you guys felt the same. Because they're all making fun of her and about Blade and everything. But the way they do it, it just sounds very forced and, ha ha ha, Britta's dumb.
Yeah, you're right. It did come across a little forced at times.
I mean, it's not Bagel. I mean, Blade's not the worst name I think I've ever heard. I mean, if somebody's named Blade, I'm like, oh, cool. You know, like, at least it's not Dingle McDingleberry or something like that. I mean,
I guess it feels a little forced, but I thought it was really funny, and I agree with everything they're saying. I love of course, Britta is obsessed with a carnival worker named Blade, and she's excited he got his promotion to the duck shooting booth.
That was funny.
I mean, my husband and I were just sitting on the couch busting a gut, because the place we moved from was like a very artsy, liberal-y area where everybody just seemed to have some kind of fake name, and everybody was like into acrobatics and fired spinning and stuff. And I mean, we definitely had a friend named Smokes who I had a crush on, like, before my husband and I, like,
dude, who didn't?
I know, right? Well, apparently not many people, because a lot of the ladies in that group were into him. And a guy named Axel from that same group was into me. Not making
all right.
Up. Yeah.
That sounds like they should form a band, and that'd be Axel
possibly.
And the Smoke.
I mean, the guy I dated a guy too before I met G that didn't go by his real name. It's not a weird name though. It had a little bit of meaning behind it, but it was not his real name. He was a drummer.
Yeah.
So we thought it was funny. Yeah. No.
Yeah. You either have to be really confident or super famous to pull off the one name, like something like "Call me Sting for the rest of my life, and don't laugh in my face. It's cool." Sting. Sure, I'll do that.
I know Brett the Hitman Hart, the professional wrestler. His two kids are named Beans and Blade.
Oh, wow.
And I just be like, those are some real choices there. Both accounts, very distinct choices.
I think Blade came out on the good end of that one, though.
Yeah,
that's right. Imagine being Beans to your sibling's Blade. Yikes!
I like
Abed said, shouldn't New Line Cinema be suing him?
Yeah.
And then they argue, well, you know, it's based on a comic book characters from Marvel's in the 70s. I'm like, oh, wow. Somebody hit Wikipedia really hard before they wrote this episode. So there you go. Great moment for the Dean. We have a Dean costume alert coming in as a train conductor. He'll be coming around the mountain when Dean comes. And when he goes choo-choo, I'm like, yep, good episode right there. That's all, you know, automatically bumps it up a letter grade.
Did he say mountain or did he say Mount Dean? Because my subtitle said Mount Dean.
But, it is Mount Dean. Yeah.
Mount Dean when Dean comes.
Mount Dean when she comes.
Oof. When she comes.
He laid it on
the thick. I heard Dean comes.
Coming
okay.
around the Mount Dean when he comes.
On an unrelated note, I'm into trains now.
That's all they have to say. I'm into trains.
And he is. He has talk about adorable little sets. He's got an adorable little train set on his desk with Dalmatians and zebras. He's got a weird black and white thing, I guess. But I like the train had all the Dalmatians in it just going around, and he's just so happy. That's our Dean. He's a tiny little kid. That's good. I laugh. I think every time, one of the best running jokes in this whole series is every time the Dean touches Jeff, and he always does every time he comes in the room, Jeff just always looks at the spot where Dean touched him. Like there's like this psychic residue that's left behind, and Jeff just doesn't know how to feel about it. And every time it just kind of makes me smile, and he does that again here too. Yeah. Shirley and Pierce have a weird little bonding moment over Britta, and Shirley says her love life makes Pierce seem with it. And Pierce says her pain unifies us.
But about 5 seconds later, he says something that puts them all off again. And I love that moment after it. He's like, I was one of the gang. It was in my hand.
It was in my hand. Chevy Chase has got some decent stuff in this episode.
He does. He does. That's like the right way to treat Pierce. I think that's exactly it. Yeah, a little bit of the butt monkey, but not quite, you know, like, you know, not quite with it, but not completely pathetic. I think that's a delicate balancing act, but this was fun. I think one of the best things I love about Britta, I see online all the time on Reddit and whatnot, where there's a large contingent of community fans that feel like Britta's been done dirty by this show. Like, she was smart and she was intelligent in the first series, you know, this first season, which I can strongly debate that, but she becomes flanderized as the show goes on, and she just becomes the butt of everybody's joke. But what they kind of really overlook in that is Britta really fires back as good as she gets sometimes. And I think we see that right here at the opening episode. They're all piling on her, but she's not breaking down from it. And she, you know, her defensive mechanism is she digs in. She gets very stubborn, and then she's not afraid to fire back. And I love this little interchange where Britta says, if he calls me, I'll be there in 5 minutes. And Shirley says, I don't understand. And Britta says, Andre much? Okay, I understand. And she had that ready to go. And I'm like, yep, Britta, respect. That was good.
Yeah, I mean, her character is certainly different than it was in the first episode, where she definitely comes off as sort of a Jesse Spano kind of college girl thing. But really, really quickly, just like you sit around anyway for too long and you start to learn all of the weird quirks about them. And the facade she puts up, sure, she can hold that for 5 minutes like she does in the first episode. But after 4 years, you do realize just how weird and ridiculous she is. Tracks for me.
Yeah, makes me love her. I like the more they talk about this guy named Blade and everything, it culminates in this little moment where Troy and Aubrey are like, you want to watch Blade tonight? Yes. Like that's college kids right there. You just keep bringing something up in a conversation, then you're like, yep, let's do it, let's go, let's watch it. And nice little continuity moment, Jeff still has a locker. I think may be the last time we ever see the locker, but he still has it. And Annie gets him to change his shirt for some eye candy. Some good little subtle, not so subtle acting on Annie's part. I like that. And then was the other girl like wolf whistle, and she's like, get a life!
He says, I'll have what she's having. The Harry Miss Sally thing.
Yeah.
Hey, grow up, lady. That's a funny exchange for someone who just walks past and we don't even see. Yeah.
Some extra from off camera there.
And then Britt is coming in saying Annie, and he's like, his shirt wasn't working. So defensive.
That's great. Immediately has to defend herself.
And Britta gets another good line. She's handing over the phone to Annie and talking about all this, and she knows Jeff's there, doesn't even look at him, and just holds up her hand and goes, pipe it. And I'm like, oh, I love it. She just knows Jeff's going to say something. She just shuts him out. And I love Britta. I love her so much. This is a fun Britta episode. So yeah, Dean Laybourne. Yeah, he comes in and puts pressure on our Dean to get Troy into the air conditioning school, because we need like a C plot in this episode. He still has that weird ponytail thing going on.
He's going through some stuff.
He still is.
And he crushes a Dalmatian in his fist. As if we didn't need a...
Does he? I missed that.
More of a sign that he's a villain. Yeah, he just picks up a little Dalmatian from from the Dean's table, and just while he's talking, he just crushes it. Very villainous.
I missed that too.
Oh, no, he does. They don't really... I kept wanting to see the pieces. You just kind of hear a little bit sound effects. But yeah. I think John Goodman could probably crush a Dalmatian. He probably could. He seems like he's got hand power. So, yeah. So for the big part of this episode, we go back to Troy and Abed and Annie's apartment, and they're sort of watching Blade, but this is so torturous for Abed because they're interrupted like a million times. And I like that line where he says, "Annie, subdue your guest."
I think Abed's devotion to Blade is my favorite runner in this episode. He just wants nothing to do with anything going on. He just wants to watch Blade.
Just please. Yeah. He does do a great job maintaining eye contact with the TV as much as possible. But yeah, Britta's enlisted Annie to help her not respond to or reach out to Blade, and to kind of treat her like she's a junkie and take the phone away. All that, hold that away from her. And then the rest of the episode is Britta trying to trick Annie into giving her phone back. And I like the banana bit. I think I like, not only does she hide the banana and kind of fake Britta out, but that she writes, "You're a lying junkie," on the side of the banana. And that's just,
that was just this extra little dig. I'm just like, oh my gosh, Annie.
And it makes sense, right? Annie knows about addiction. Annie's been through her whole Adderall phase. So she's not really looking down on Britta in this moment. She just realizes that Britta will go to any length to get together with Blade. And it will be bad for her.
And writing it on that banana and putting on something so ridiculous and hiding it. It's just, I thought it was perfect.
So I want to call out, they do... Mm-hmm. So very clearly, while they're watching Blade throughout this episode, they are not watching Blade. There's no music. There's no dialogue. There's nothing.
There's Wilhelm screams loudly, like over all the other sound effects.
But during the banana scene, they do a reverse shot where you can see the TV, and they also have it changed to a DVD screensaver.
Mm-hmm.
So it just feels very, very, very clear to me that they were not going to pay to get the rights to show even a millisecond of Blade on micro inch of this TV screen.
Mm-mm. He should have done like a kick puncher thing and just done a generic, you know, offshoot with Garrett or something, somebody with a katana blade. But yeah, you're totally right. And that would have been really distracting too. That really, I mean, that movie would not have really fit into this episode. So I think that's probably wise. I like when that first confrontation they have with Annie and Britta and the banana. And it ends in a hug, and Annie says, "We're not defined by our limitations. We are defined by our potential." And Abed pipes up, "I have the potential to watch Blade." He's so annoyed at all of this. It's great. And Troy's a little annoyed too. Like, especially the more and more Annie starts monkeying around with the phone and Britta. And Troy is just not a happy camper in this episode. He's very disappointed with all of this stuff going on.
I would have been super annoyed if someone insisted on reading out every stupid text message that they were getting.
Yeah.
What are people's opinions on Troy in this episode?
I find it interesting you ask that, because I hadn't really thought of that. Now
he's
I'm
the
thinking
character
why
in the show.
Why should I have this thought?
I did find him like a bit less funny than usual. But then there was one line that was really funny that I forget what it was. But I feel like he had less funny bits than he usually does.
He looked upset like all the time, and I couldn't really understand why he was this viciously upset. For the most part, is he supposed to be jealous over Britta and Blade? Are they, you know, I mean, I get that they're trying to eventually force this whole Troy and Britta kind of like each other, and you know, he writes something nice to her through the text messages at the end and she realizes it, and that's a cute moment. But the rest of the episode is supposed to be either him being really annoyed by this, or him being really annoyed at Annie for the techniques she's using, or him just being jealous. I have no idea. He just looks grumpy.
Yeah, he's definitely grumpy. I feel like he is, like you said, that they have, even at this point, they've alluded a couple times to the fact that Troy and Britta kind of like each other. And he's not having a good time. He is not enjoying a laugh at her expense. He doesn't find it funny that they want to bring up her bad qualities. He's really just annoyed at this entire thing. Again, he knows exactly what'll set her off. It really bothers him, I think, when we get to the end and her getting a nice thing said to her by Blade, or she thinks by Blade, is all it takes to turn her off. And it really bums him out to the point where he's just like, I don't want to play anymore. And I thought it was a really interesting through line in this, because there is something that's just, she's a damaged person, and there is something kind of sad about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, considering Troy is just sort of this, you know, this bubbly 10-year-old of a college student, that he's an interesting person to put that on the screen. So I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it, but I just think it's interesting that they really do take the time to establish that as a part of the story.
So, Thomas, is the line you're looking for, the funny line where Britta says, you're the opposites of Batman, and Troy says, you don't know what that means?
That's probably the one. That's a good one.
Like, that's a callback to the first episode of the season where Troy says that to Britta. Says you're the opposite of Batman.
That's when Britta, right. Like, yeah.
Ruins nothing. Yeah.
It's a pretty good insult.
It's not too bad. Yeah. When Britta gets all treacly and syrupy and stuff toward Annie, trying to get the phone back, and like, we're sisters now. Oh, my little sister, you think I can have my phone back? And the so fake acting on Britta's part is, it's hard to take. Almost like I watch it, I'm like, oh, it's like Annie's not buying it either, but Annie still gives the phone back for reasons. And I like that little moment where she leaves the room smiling, and then she leans against the door and the dean calls out, what's the matter, Annie? You were smiling just a minute ago, but then you leaned against the door and your smile faded.
Everything that Dean says is just magic. That's so good.
Oh, and we shouldn't skip Dean's entrance into the apartment.
No, we shouldn't.
With Lett's potato chips and like Stonyfield's root beer.
Some he has like a six pack there, yeah. Isn't he in pajamas too?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And Abed's like, I need help reacting to some.
I loved that. That was another one where my husband and I have just guffawed.
I was actually taking a sip of a drink at that moment and almost did just a cliche spit take. That was that line is just the best. So well
better
delivered.
To do the spit take than through the nose, right?
No. That's right. Oh, yeah.
You
don't want a nasally element to it.
But now, if I remember correctly, that was floated as a name for this podcast, except one of those already exists. Am I remembering that correctly?
What, Flonase?
No. I need help reacting to
yes,
something.
Yes, exactly. Flonase, the podcast.
We would have really thrown people off with that one.
But no, I need help reacting to something. Didn't somebody throw that out there a name for our podcast back in the day?
I don't remember. It's a good one.
Yeah.
Definitely would have been me.
A little long, but that's
because I didn't know him.
Or maybe, again, but I think there is already a community podcast out there called I Need Help Reacting to Something.
That's clever. I like it.
It's just such a perfect moment. It's so like dry and unexpected the way Abed delivers it. And they don't cut to him. He's just still like in soft focus. It's still on the dean. And it just, it's so funny. It's the most funny line.
Yeah, and this whole bit of the dean just showing up and never explaining why he's there. And every time he talks, everybody's like, why are you here? And he's like, ouch. And then he keeps talking. And then he makes a little half-hearted effort at the end to recruit Troy to the school. She's like, oh, by the way, Troy, do you want to join the air conditioning repair school? Well, I tried. Everything about all of that, just like they just kind of let him in, and he's just like this little lost puppy who's sort of joining this thing, but
and it shows how far we've come that he can do that and it doesn't seem too weird. I mean, it's a bit weird, but if in season one the Dean was just hanging out at their apartment, that would have been really weird. But we've gotten to know him now. He's practically one of the group.
Yeah,
it really works.
And I remember back in the Batman DVD episode, there was that moment where, like, everybody's doing a lot of facial acting, a lot of really good comedic back and forth. And we were kind of praising it for that. I think there's another moment like that in this episode, too, when there's the phone scene, when Britta gets the phone back and she's in there and Annie hasn't really thought this through. And they're like, Annie, it's going to go straight to your voicemail and all of that. There's this moment where there's just a ton of face acting. Troy, Abed, Annie, and the Dean are just free. Troy is completely ticked. Abed's trying to figure out like the best strategy of how, you know, like what sitcom strategy would really work in this situation. Annie's freaking out. The Dean is doing weirdness, whatever. And then they like, the best tactic was to fake a carnival. And they immediately like just step in and like step right up, ding, ding, ding. And like, I was like, oh, all of that just, it was a nice, wonderful bouncing off of each other comedic moment. I like that.
Yeah. And that's the bit too, where Annie answers the phone and just tries to quickly improvise Blade's voice. And it's so terrible. She does this like low, like grumbly thing and then just hangs up. And yeah, all of their faces there are just perfect. I think the Dean's even like, well, that wasn't so good.
And her response is, well, I don't know, which is just so perfect somehow.
Yeah.
And Britta's apparently not hearing any of this through the door. I guess she's hyper focused on the phone, which
she's too blinded by Blade.
Yeah. I like that line where Troy's like, she was born in the 80s. She still uses a phone as a phone.
Ouch.
No, maybe that was the line of Troy's.
Yeah, that was a good one too. How do you feel about how all this wraps up in the apartment with the bit of, with Troy eventually getting sick of the texting back and forth and, you know, Annie just can't learn. The more Annie insults Britta, the more Britta wants Blade, and Troy's like, don't you get it, she's attracted to guys who are mean to her. And he takes the phone and texts something really nice and then deletes it so that Annie can't see what it is, and mm-hmm. that immediately turns Britta, like Britta pops out and like, oh yeah, I'm okay now, I'm fine. Troy looks even more depressed than he was a couple mm-hmm. minutes ago. And then it kind of like eventually turns around, like they get it back around where Troy comes out of his little blanket fort and Britta has this nice little moment with Annie where Annie confirms that, you know, Troy's the guy who sent her that text. And yeah, I don't know. How do you feel about the resolution of all that? Awkward silence. The best silence.
Well, I like that Britta, like Annie and Britta have that moment where Annie makes it clear that it was Troy that sent her whatever nice message it was. And she looks at him and has that moment of realization. And I'm guess putting myself in her position, like that's nice. If you've got these issues, you know, with wanting these awful people in your life in, you know, terms of Blade and people like that. But then it just seemed like a good little moment of clarity for her to realize I'm really enjoy being with these people that care about me and make me feel like I should care about me too. So, I mean, that was nice.
I think Britta sells it pretty well. I mean, I don't know if it's, you know, my favorite story, but it works for me, I think, because even when she steps out of the bedroom and just after Troy's sent a nice message and the look on her face is, I don't know if I was reading too much into it, but it made me kind of sad in a way that worked. Actually, she just looked so like like, I don't know, like, should just come out of an experience. And I don't know, I felt something there. I think it seemed more real than it could have been. It could have been really just cheesy and fake.
Annie really goes off on Britta at one point. She's like, who hurt you and why didn't it stick? Don't quite get the logic of that sentence, but she's just really upset, you know, like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and I feel a little bad for Annie. She was genuinely trying to help Britta and maybe made some really bad calls along the way there. But yeah, I could see the frustration coming out there.
Yeah, I think Jeff coming back into the story at that point, or coming into the apartment, the two stories colliding at that point, helps, because it does get kind of real, which is sort of what I was saying before, that I feel like it's a more grounded story than Community will often tell. And I think it could have gotten a little too serious if they did not reintroduce Jeff to spill the beans about Blade.
Do you think his speech, like, he lost me at some point?
It's not his best speech.
It's not his best speech.
I don't exactly know what the message is or if it makes sense, but, you know, it sounds like a Jeff speech. So
he's still under the influence of Blade's just magnetic personality. He's still struggling.
Another favorite little bit here of Pierce is when he goes and locks himself in Annie's room. He's not really okay.
It's really quite sweet. Such a sweet ending to what was like just a throwaway little C plot.
Yeah, I'm just going to go lock myself in your room. Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about the B story and the C story, both taking place at this adorable little carnival. With, you know, apparently 30 extras and Jeff and Shirley getting to hang out together, which I was overly delighted about. We talked about this before. They're such a fun pairing, and especially when the show just lets them be two friends doing friend stuff. I like that little line where they're hanging out to spy on Britta's ex, and Shirley doesn't judge him. She's like, I get it. You know, and he says, you're the only one who understands. Like, that's, you know, like, they have a bond. It's cool. I, again, wish that they had done more with this, but.
Well, on their bond, I also liked where Shirley just says, apropos of nothing, just, he's not as attractive as you are. And he says, I wasn't fishing for that. And she said, no, I was offering that up for free. Like, just was like, I liked that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, yeah, she sounds like an adult, just kind of handling this as an adult. Yeah. This is a weird, complicated situation.
I do also like, though, that immediately, again, Jeff zeroes in on his target, and that's the end of the facade that they're just here to hang out at the carnival. What do you want to do, Shirley? I'd like to go on a ride. What do you want to do next? I want to go on a ride. I think we should go shoot some ducks. Totally disregarded her as soon as it's...
They don't have a budget for a ride. There's no roller coaster in the cafeteria. But yeah, he goes hardcore in on. And just seeing poor Shirley having to hold more and more stuffed animals as the episode goes along. Felt a little bad for the actress. That's a lot to always have to be carrying. But it was kind of really funny after a while. And then she just... kind of gives up and walks away, and he's like, the big one's mine.
Okay. So I like that Jeff immediately, like, he figures this out in a moment. He didn't even need to figure it out. He already kind of knew. But within 10 seconds of them seeing Blade, he goes, well, obviously he's a dirtball and Britta hates herself and she likes guys that treat her badly. Done. But that's not good enough for him. Having that answer doesn't actually matter to him.
No, because he's self-serving too. It's not just that he wants an answer. He wants to, what does he say? He wants to know that if he had the option at some point to do this to women. He wants to hear the secret of how to drive a woman jealous just in case he has to. And that's, you know, so that kind of drives him past the point of curiosity to the dark side of Jeff, where he shouldn't probably be dabbling. And the answer he learns is that, Blade has no shame because he lost that part of his brain a while back. And so he just doesn't care. Like, he doesn't care what people think about him. He doesn't, he just, everything kind of bounces off of him, which some days, man, I wish that was me. I don't know how you guys feel. Like,
I wouldn't want to never be able to feel shame, but I would definitely love to be able to turn it on and off.
It's a nice superpower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Always a little too worried about what other people think. Yeah.
Same.
This guy just does not. This guy, by the way, actor, I forget his name. I'm sure. Do you guys know his name? Mm-hmm. I recognize him from Parks and Rec because he plays the sewer department head. Joe or whatever.
Oh, okay. I could see that.
The super slimy guy who's always got women, like gorgeous young interns in his sewage department until he gets kicked out.
Kirk Fox is his name. Gosh. Kirk
Fox, there you go.
His real name is almost a Blade level name.
Yeah.
You ever look at somebody's name and went, man, I wish I had a cool name like that. Isn't it like Bear? A couple of people with the first name of Bear, I'm like, oh.
I have a nephew called Tiger. Tiger. A pretty cool one.
Tiger Thomas.
Yeah, that's how it works. Yep.
It works.
We've seen Jeff in this mode a few times before as well, where he's kind of jealous of some guy. Like, there was that episode where he was trying to be more like Rich. And it's always fun to see him like this. I think it humbles Jeff in a way, and it's enjoyable to watch him kind of struggle with this internal desire to be a more desirable man.
Yeah. I like how aggressive he gets with just the shooting gallery, and Blade just like, okay, whatever, here's another stuffed animal for you. He just kind of humors him, and that's funny.
I also like, they suggest, that this parent's name me, what could I do? So you could change the name to what? Templeton Ferrari III? It's like, it seems like he's thought about this.
What does he say that doesn't change the taste of
mustard?
Mustard.
Yeah.
And that's what makes sure they go, oh, I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we barely have enough time for the C plot, which really feels shoehorned in here, which is Chang and Pierce hanging out, becoming best friends, thanks to musical montages. And it really just kind of boils down to them skipping around with some cotton candy, enjoying each other's company, and then having a fight and, breaking up.
I think if you're going to do a C plot, this is the way to do it. I like it. It's wastes no time. We cut to them like three times. Each one I thought was different and funny, and we get Chang in the episode. So win.
Chang suggesting Russian roulette as the next thing they should do.
Showing he's still
not
unhinged.
Even Pierce quite goes there, right? He's Russian roulette. Oh my goodness. Chang.
The implications of what could have happened had this friendship continued are horrifying.
Oh yeah. Yeah, especially if this had happened last season when Pierce was full on evil and he had gotten Chang as like his minion. Oh, dude. For real.
Mm-hmm.
So anything else you want to say about either one of those plots? I'm out of ammunition at this point. That was a duck shooting joke. All right. So we go to the end credits. Abed doing stand-up jokes in front of Troy and Jeff that are hyper-specific to his apartment.
And now, I don't
know
if you guys...
I'm going to talk about toaster oven!
I don't know if you guys have seen Danny Pudi like in interviews or anything much, but this scene, I swear, this is not Abed. This is Danny Pudi. This is the first time in the show that it's
off.
He has not been acting as Abed at all. This is him in real life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen a little bit of him in interviews and stuff, and it was so neat to just, I was like, oh, he's got a little smile on his face. There's his face. There he is.
Did you ever see his interview with Larry King?
I don't think I did. No.
I haven't seen the whole thing. There's a clip of it though, where Larry King asks him what's his guilty pleasure, and he says, "Yeah, I like a nice warm pair of socks." He says, "Socks? That's just socks. I mean, don't you want to like fly first class or take a cruise?" Or he goes, "Larry, I work on DuckTales. I like socks." He's wonderful.
It's so good.
Yeah, and DuckTales has like two or three of the Community people. That's the Dean in it, and
that's right,
Danny Pudi, and yeah. I thought one other person was in it too from Community. But
I love the stand up bit. By the way, I think it's a little jarring only because Troy was in a very specific emotional state when we left him, and in this he's back to being.
I didn't think of that. That's so true. He's complete opposite.
But I think the two of them are hilarious. I really, really like the ending, even though it's.
Like the idea. I think the idea is funny of like a comedian just up there telling a super specific joke because one person in the audience lives with him, so everything's about their apartment. I think I like that.
Just it kind of reinforces how deep their friendship is.
Yeah.
That's their universe. You don't really go outside that bubble. I mean, if you don't know what the Dreamatorium is and you don't know it well enough to make jokes about it, then you get out of here.
Troy excitedly going, yeah, yeah. Dreamatorium.
And yet it's yet another one of those end credit sequences where Jeff is kind of thrust into this as the straight guy into the middle of Troy and Abed, and it works so well. Like, he's obviously humoring them and he wants to be there, and like he likes their friendship, but he just doesn't. He's like, oh dude, you guys are kids.
The Dean in there as the even straighter guy, which is so good. And just his face of like no comprehension of anything that's going on is brilliant.
Wait, the Dean was in that scene?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got on the couch Dean, Jeff, and Troy.
Did I just mentally block him out? Because it was, wow.
Maybe, because he wasn't doing much out there stuff. He was playing it very straight. He was just like, why am I here?
He was just in shock, really.
Yeah.
No, nobody in this universe has anywhere to be. They just
join our class.
It's like how at the start of this episode, Jeff reminds the Dean, you're also supposed to administrate the school. And never mind.
No, he's got trains. That's more important. I like when the Dean gets really snitty with his secretary. And she's like, get it yourself.
Like, I don't know how. But I don't want to overlook the stinger at the end of, I guess the stinger at the end of the stinger, I guess, the end joke of the stand-up album of the thing is with the toaster oven. Oh, it's from his album, which means this is not a one-off thing.
Yes, of course there's an album, right? All right, let's move on to report card. And Thomas is going to start us off with that so that we can base our future judgments on.
Ooh, wow. All right. Get ready to copy off my scorecard then, because it's going to be perfect. This episode, I thought, was just going to be just an ordinary, decent episode for me. It starts off and you can kind of see where the plots are going a bit, and it's all quite, I don't know, it feels predictable at the start, I suppose. So I thought it was going to be all right, but then the episode gets cooking and it sucked me in, honestly, and it got under my skin. Just some lines are just so funny. I mean, the Abed, I need help reacting to this at the door thing, basically raises this episode up several notches just by itself. Just that one line. I think it might be potentially the funniest bit this whole season so far. That's a big statement, but it might be. It really killed me. And the fact that there's so much Dean in this episode, you know, the Dean is my fave. Ah, and he's just so good. And he's sitting there watching Blade with them and just commenting on everything that's happening. And he says to Troy at one point, what does he say? Yeah, that's just like Blade, man, straight up. <He's so good. laughs> love him so much. So that raises the episode several notches as well. Such a good Britta episode. I love that she gets to play quite differently across the scenes. The bit where she's so sweet and girly with Annie is pretty hilarious. And I like Jeff and Shirley paired up, as we've talked about. They're just such a good pair, and seeing that again is great. And I enjoyed Pierce and Chang, like I said, too. So I ended up finding just so much to enjoy in this episode, even though I thought the story was a bit, just a basic sitcom episode. So I'm going to give it a really solid B for many good chuckles.
Okay, if you don't mind, I'll go next. Even if you do mind, I'm still going next because I have no shame tonight, at least. Yeah, I thought this was an interesting little twist. The more I thought about it, that maybe the normal sitcom convention would have been, somebody who has a weakness or an addiction to something would have immediately dived into it, and everybody trying to, all their friends trying to do an intervention or trying to head off that person at the pass. Whereas this episode starts with Britta going, I have a weakness for this guy. I loathe myself because of it. I don't want to do it. So help me. And I like that, even as, she asked for help. She wants to be helped. And again, we see a little bit of Britta maybe being the best psychiatrist in this entire show. Sorry, Duncan. Because, she's very self-aware of where her weak spot is here. So that to me made it very interesting, like that the setup there. I always do kind of get let down by how quickly Annie gives in to giving her phone back. And she sort of makes a half-hearted, like, she needs to be trusted or something like that. She's not asking to be trusted. She just wanted to not talk to this guy for the weekend. Like, you could have just kept the phone away. We didn't talk about another little nice Troy line where he mentions the phone being in the freezer or the fridge or something. He's like, oops. And everybody in Britta diving for it. And then Annie mocking Troy about that later. That was pretty good.
That's you.
Yeah. It's a decent episode. There's some stuff that works. Again, the Jeff speech at the end is, I don't know what they were going for, and it just kind of lost me, and it lost a little bit of momentum, and it felt like they were scrambling in the last 2 minutes to just wrap it up in a way that was not a downer, and they sort of half-heartedly land it, so that's okay. There are some good lines. I think the standout for me was probably Jeff and Shirley. I really like seeing them together, but nothing really propels this episode for me above a C. It's a average episode for an above average season. So especially after the last couple episodes, it just felt like, meh, that's okay. That's all right. Will Al agree with me? Will he disagree, or will he just have his own thoughts as an original person that he is? Let's find out next.
I'm a wild card, baby. I really like this episode. I think it's got a lot of funny stuff. Obviously, the I need help reacting to something is a standout line. The Dean is fantastic. There is exactly the right amount of him, which is plenty, but he's not the focus. So I really like that. Jeff and Shirley, like y'all have said, really funny Britta episode. The plot is very standard. The plot is, it's very sitcom. This could be an episode of The Big Bang Theory. And that's okay. It is a sitcom, but it doesn't go to any of the zaniness that Community can embrace. So that doesn't let this get to an A, but I think it's a really enthusiastic B from me. I was waffling as to whether I want it to be a B or a B plus. I think I'm okay with B. Again, I don't know how I feel about the Troy thing, because Troy is a kid. He is a kid in a football player's body. So the idea of him having a romantic pursuit is just weird to me. And they tease the Annie and Jeff stuff that I'm not the biggest fan of. They do it well. It's done well. I think Pierce has done really well. I think there's the right amount of Chang in this as well. The two of them just bounce off each other just enough. As Thomas said, great use of a C-plot. Just enough scenes to give them something to do. Be funny, be memorable, and be out. He gives a great button on there of I'm going to get locked in your room. He's apparently undergoing his own therapy for the toxic relationship. That's a really great exit for him. So I like everything here. It just doesn't rise to the heights that Community is capable of. So yeah, very happy, very enthusiastic B.
I want to hear more enthusiasm when you say the word B.
B!
All right, stick in the mud. Let's go.
Yay! I was like, wait a minute, I'm not that grumpy, am I? And then I was like, oh yeah, I named myself Stick. Because
it's either that or beat you with an ugly stick, and I wasn't going to go there.
Thank you. You're welcome. I really, honestly, B. Made you think I was going to do something silly and do this big, long, drawn-out thing. But no, honestly, I agree with you guys completely. There's a lot of great moments between certain characters that I hadn't gotten to see in a while. So that was great. The lines alone, just like I said, had my husband and I just beside ourselves with laughter several times. But the story is really disjointed and not my favorite thing. So yeah, it's a B.
Do you guys realize that our last episode was our 70th episode of Community Rewatching 101?
Whoa.
That's so episodes. Amazing.
I can't believe that.
That's a lot of episodes for us. Twice a month. We've been doing it for a few years now. It's been good. It's just crazy. Mm-hmm. And we're only here, you know, kind of rounding out the second half of season two, but still a ways. I'm sorry, season three, and still ways to go here. Yeah. I'm rewinding the clock. We're going back to season two. Yeah. We're just going to be.
We got to do it all again, back from the top.
Yeah. I think that's what we'll probably do for our very last episode, is we'll do the pilot all over again.
Imagine if we just did them all again, like we just started over again. And I wonder how many different things we'd say. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. But it would no longer be fresh for Heather.
Yeah. Oh, that's all right. I'd finally be on a somewhat even playing field with you guys.
Thomas would be married with a 3-year-old of his own, and that'll be interesting. So.
And several more plants that have come and gone.
Yeah, plants.
While we were recording this, by the way, his plant died. So,
wow, that's all right. That's not funny.
It has a name.
I got to go check on it now.
He didn't realize the sound of air horn was fatal to that species.
My son asked me why we record at a certain time, and I said, well, we have to coordinate. We have people all across the planet, by which I mean a few of us right here, and then Thomas all the way across the world. And my son said, well, why doesn't he just live here though? I'm like, yeah, it would make it way more convenient for
that's
me.
That's a good point. That's a good call.
Apparently
it's so simple. It's brilliant.
Well, we want to thank you for listening to Community Rewatching 101, but wait, I know you're thinking, what am I going to do with the next 2 weeks of my life? Be a productive member of society, go to work, care for my family, have relationships, touch grass? No. We're not encouraging you to do any of that. We want you to go to mutantreviewersmovies.com. That is the best website in existence that I'm going to mention in this sentence. It's amazing. It's a project that we've been working on since 1997, believe it or not. And you will believe it by some of our old reviews. Oh, yes, you'll believe it. We did not have full mastery of the human language. But we were very enthusiastic, an enthusiastic B even, about B movies and cult movies and weird movies and quotable movies and underrated movies. And we still cover all these movies like crazy. Movies like Blade and Blade 2 and Blade Trinity. So you can go check out all those reviews on our website. Maybe I should put the links to that in the show notes. I don't know if I'll be lazy or not. I'll try to do that. But anyways, mutantreviewersmovies.com is the official sponsor here of Community Rewatching 101. It's our parent umbrella corporation. It's not even a corporation. It's us. It's weirdos. We've been reviewing movies for a very long time. So check that out. Also check out Heather's stream. She loves it when you throw a bad movie or bad games at her. So please buy all sorts of bad games and just tell her she has to review them.
Force me to play them on stream for your amusement. Yeah.
Play that game, Sputnik.
I am your game monkey.
Yeah. And of course, start counting down to Thomas's next YouTube video, which might come out in 2025. We don't know. I don't know.
That's the thing. You can never know for sure. And that's what's so exciting about it.
All right. That's it for today's show. Thanks to all of my co-hosts for showing up and putting in the time and effort to watch the first 20 minutes of the movie. We really appreciate it.
Okay, that seems crazy.
Take care.
Take care of your plants.